you got cooking? How about cooking something up with me?
Let's stir it up, boys.
Welcome to the Outdoor Cooking Show, a weekly excursion into the fine art of preparing the world's most popular recipes under an open sky and an open flame. This edition of the Outdoor Cooking Show is brought to you by Boyd's One Stop, located at the Texas City Dyke. Now, here's your host, the old grill sergeant, Randy Hayes.
Well, the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo ends today, so I guess another long, cold winter is over in the Bayou City. That's just silly, isn't it? Winter in Houston is the punchline to a bad joke. But we like it that way, don't we? You know, I spent a winter in Seoul, South Korea when I was in the Army, and that was enough to convince me I didn't ever want to live north of the Mason-Dixon line. As a result of that decision, I turned down some very good job offers at radio stations in Buffalo, Milwaukee, and Seattle, just to name a few. Now, Seattle's not as frigid cold like Korea or Buffalo or Milwaukee, but I did take basic training in Fort Lewis, which is just outside Seattle. I can tell you this much, it's wet cold up there. As a matter of fact, I remember we were standing on the loading dock of the supply depot at Fort Lewis. It was right after they'd issued us field gear for basic training, and it was raining so hard that fish were begging for mercy. We just had a few minutes to kill waiting for the buses to carry us back to the company area, so the drill sergeant asked if we had any questions. One goober said,
"Drill sergeant, does it rain like this all the time?"
The drill sergeant kind of glanced out at the rain, and he turned back to us with this sly smile on his face, and he said, "Gentlemen, had you chosen to arrive here in June, July, or August, you would find this a veritable paradise. Sunshine, 75 degrees, soft sea breezes. However, this is what we lovingly refer to as monsoon season. It will rain just like this every day you are here." I thought to myself, horse apples, he's just trying to scare us. It won't rain. It rained every day we were there, except one, and that day it snowed. No, I'm not exaggerating. That 4 months in Washington State came back to my mind several years later when I was offered a very nice job at a radio station in Seattle, and I turned it down almost immediately, just because of my memories of the weather that winter in basic training. No, I'll take winter in Texas over just about anywhere up north, thank you very much. And when my old Army buddy from Ohio used to laugh at me for complaining about how cold it got in Korea, I'd just look at him and say, "Hey, I'm not the one who's going to have to live in Youngstown for the rest of my life. You are." Several years ago, I noticed Ohio got hammered by a blizzard. They call it the lake effect up there. It's when a major cold front blows in off the Great Lakes. It'll hit places like Cleveland and then travel down the state toward Akron and Canton and Youngstown. They got about, a foot of snow in about 24 to 48 hours. So I called my buddy and I said, "Hey, pal, guess what I did today? I cleaned out the pool in shorts, no shoes, and a T-shirt. Wow, I hear you got a little snow." Yeah, it was cruel. But he got even with me in August. I just said, "Yeah, it's 100 degrees, but that's why we dig holes in our backyards and fill them up with water." And if you think Yankees don't prefer our hot summers to their cold winters, just ask one of them why they moved down here and never go back. Yeah, I'll take hot summers in Houston over raw, bitter, cold winters in Buffalo or Milwaukee any day. And there's another drawback to living in Siberia. They have to pack up their backyard cookers in October and store them away till April or May. We just keep on cooking all winter long. And that's why the Outdoor Cooking Show runs year-round. In fact, we got some really nice comments about the last two shows on crawfish, so let's read one. "Randy, I learned a lot about crawfish, but you never gave us your favorite recipe." You know, that's right, I didn't. It wasn't because I didn't want to, it was because we ran out of time. Again, two shows on crawfish and we still ran out of time. It seems people love to talk about mud bugs. so I'll be happy to share a recipe. I'm going to go with crawfish fettuccine, because there's such a fusion of Cajun and Italian cultures in New Orleans, and Houston, for that fact. You need bell peppers, parsley, onions, garlic, and cheese. Lots of cheese. Everybody uses Parmesan, of course, but some people even add Velveeta. I'm not so sure about that. Obviously, you sauté all these things, and then you add flour, half and half, jalapeno relish, if you like, some margarine, and, of course, crawfish tail meat from Boyd's One Stop at the base of the Texas City Dike. Now, it's important you add all those things in the right order, but this is only a one-hour show, so I'll just say cover and cook for about a half an hour. Then cook the fettuccine in another saucepan, obviously, and stir it in. Some crawfish seasoning for taste. Throw it all into a casserole dish. Sprinkle some more Parmesan on top. Okay, smother it in Parmesan. And bake at 350 till you can't touch it. You add a salad, some French bread, you'll get luckier than a leprechaun in the middle of March. So, happy mudbug season, everybody. Now, before we dive too deeply into cooking, I did want to take just a moment to talk about a young man I hope you'll seriously consider helping out. His name is Corbin Lehman. He's 14 years old. He's an avid skateboarder. Corbin lives in Sweeney. But the problem is there aren't many places in Sweeney where he can safely or even legally skateboard, so he's taken on the responsibility to organize and build a skateboard park where kids can have some fun without bothering other people. He's even appeared before the Sweeney City Council, 14 years old, and they gave him some land where he can build the park, but the fundraising is entirely up to him. This is where you come in. Here's an industrious young man. He's taken on a task a lot of adults would shy away from, and he needs your help. The skateboard park is going to cost like $125,000 to build, so Corbin has set up a GoFundMe account to raise the money. Just visit GoFundMe and search for Sweeney-Skatepark, and you can donate to help Corbin get this thing done. I'm blown away by this. It's a 14-year-old kid. He's showing maturity beyond his years and a willingness to assume this kind of project, which is a massive effort, so he deserves your support. Once again, visit GoFundMe and search for Sweeney-Skatepark. And good luck to you, Corbin. Now, let's move on to the subject of this week's edition of the Outdoor Cooking Show, diversity. People in Buffalo and Milwaukee and Youngstown might be surprised by this, but we already knew what the U.S. Census revealed back in 2010, that Houston is now the most diverse big city in the country. They even gave it a title, the most culturally diverse city in America. Now, a lot of people view this with a great deal of pride. I'm among them. But let's be honest enough to admit that not everybody agrees with that. I can vividly recall when I moved my wife and infant son Derek to Houston back in 1980, Houston was proud to claim a very different title, the biggest little country town in America. And a lot of people don't like the change in demographics Houston has undergone in the ensuing decades. Now, some say that attitude is based in racism, and I'm sure that's true to a certain extent, but not entirely. A lot of Houstonians just cling to that wild, wild west image of the city, much akin to the rodeo that's ending today. But on the other hand, I'd like to point out there's no shortage of cultural diversity in the crowds at NRG Stadium or in the livestock show. There are lots of people from widely varied cultures and ethnicities who attend the rodeo and the livestock show. So I don't think diversity in Houston has watered down our Western image in the least. In point of fact, I think many of the people from other parts of the world absolutely love the history, the cowboy image of this city they've adopted as their own. So I'm going to defend Houston's new title, the most culturally diverse city in America. Some people may think diversity is a dirty word, but I'm going to have to respectfully disagree. But no matter where you stand on diversity, there's one thing for sure. Houston's cultural diversity has created culinary diversity like we never could have imagined 35 years ago, and that's a good thing for anyone who loves good food. And isn't that just about all of us? So let's talk about culinary diversity today. And who knows, you might discover something new and delicious to eat, too.
If your barbecue has gone up in smoke and your cooking reputation is at stake, stick around. The Old Grill Sergeant will be right back with more ideas and advice to make your next cookout sizzle.
Boyd's One Stop. The name says it all. If you like seafood, you'll love Boyd's, conveniently located at the base of the Texas City Dyke. Boyd's One Stop has bait, tackle, fresh seafood, and even a restaurant, all at 227 Dyke Road. If you fish Galveston Bay, Boyd's is the one and only stop for everything you need. There's a reason why they're called the live shrimp capital of Texas. But they've also got lots of finger mullet, croaker, plus fresh dead shrimp, shad, and squid. Plus, Boyd's has tackle galore, ice and ice chests, and cold drinks and snacks. Just need fresh fish for a family seafood feast? The freshest seafood, like table shrimp, live blue crab, and crawfish when in season, is in stock and ready for you at Boyd's. And if you're hungry right now, check out Boyd's Cajun Grill Express right next door, with a wide variety of breakfast, lunch, and dinner items like crawfish, oyster po'boys, and fried seafood platters. Boyd's One Stop, the name says it all, 227 Dyke Road at the base of the Texas City Dyke. Randy Hames here, and my salsa has to pass the chip test. That's why I personally recommend Jake's Atomic Salsa. Jake Johnson isn't your typical middle school student. He's picky about salsa, too, so he developed his own. And it was so good, his friends asked him to sell them some, and Jake's Atomic Salsa was born. Jake's Atomic Salsa has a hearty blend of tomatoes, plus roasted poblano, serrano, jalapeno, and habanero peppers. It also includes lots of fresh lemon and lime juice to add bright notes, with no large chunks of onion or cilantro. Jake's Atomic Salsa comes in four different flavors, from mild to out-of-this-world spicy, and goes great with eggs, enchiladas, meatloaf, Bloody Marys, or just pour it over cream cheese. It's the best salsa you've ever tasted, and all the profits go to pay for Jake's college education. Check out Jake's Atomic Salsa on Facebook, and go to jakesatomicsalsa.com to order a few jars, or try the variety pack with all four flavors. I know, you'll agree with me, Jake's Atomic Salsa is the bomb. Creekstone Outdoor Living. The name says it all. If you like being outdoors in your own space, you'll love Creekstone Outdoor Living. Located on the north side of Houston, Creekstone Outdoor Living has grills, lighting, appliances, pizza ovens, furniture, and even a design studio at 3555 Rayford Road, Suite 60 in Spring, Texas, just off the Grand Parkway. If you love your backyard, Creekstone Outdoor Living has everything you need. There's a reason why they're called the Backyard Paradise Specialists. They also carry the quality brands you love, like Yeti, RCX, Lynx, Fire Magic, Weber, American Muscle Grill, The Big Green Egg, Coppersmith, and many more. Just looking for some storage for the game or fishing? No problem. The Yeti Tundra Coolers are perfect for the job and come in sizes weighing up to 90 pounds. And if you're looking for some great design ideas, inspiration, or even some of their work, visit their website at www.creekstoneoutdoors.com. Creekstone Outdoor Living, the Backyard Paradise Specialists, 3555 Rayford Road, Suite 60, Spring, Texas, 713-389-5936. Hi, it's Randy Hames again. Everybody needs a new video, or a new website, or help in managing their social media. And my company, Edgewater Multimedia, can help. We help small businesses navigate the intimidating world of cyber advertising. You've got a business to run, and you don't have time to build and maintain your own website all by yourself, and you certainly don't have time to generate content for it. And when's the last time you had an extra hour or two to post something on your company's Facebook or Twitter accounts? Like never, right? Well, at Edgewater Multimedia, that's what we do. We have a web designer on staff who has built some of the most eye-catching websites you've ever seen. And Edgewater features a photographer and videographer who can capture beautiful images to enhance the content on your website, not to mention social media. We can even manage your Facebook and Twitter accounts for you. Call us today, 832-500-4272, or see our website, edgewatermultimedia.com.
Life is simple. Eat, sleep, grill. The Outdoor Cooking Show is brought to you by Froberg's Farm on Highway 6 in Alvin. Now, here's the grill father, Randy Hames.
We are especially pleased to host Chris Shepherd, owner and executive chef at Underbelly, the story of Houston food. How you doing, Chris?
Fantastic. Thanks for having me on.
So why did you give Underbelly that subtitle, The Story of Houston Food? What's that all about?
Well, Houston is one of the most culturally diverse cities in the country, if not the most. And so we wanted people to understand what our food is and how it relates to where we're at as far as the city. And so we try to bring in the influences throughout the city through its cultures and its diversity, and bringing that into our restaurant by using only local small farmers.
So why the name Underbelly? What does that indicate?
It's a side of things not seen. And a lot of people, when they look at Houston, they just generalize it and say, you know, it's strip centers and Tex-Mex and barbecue, and it's so much more than that. And so, you know, having like the second largest Vietnamese population in the country, and all these ethnic groups that are all over the city that have migrated here into Houston and set up shop and live here for many, many years, it's showing those cultures that exist. And even Houstonians that have lived here for a long time, if you just get on, we're built on a city of freeways, and if you just get on a freeway, and you miss all of what's really the underbelly of the city. And that's what we try and highlight.
Very nice. You mentioned locally sourced food. Underbelly seems to be very proud of that. Talk about it.
Well, we don't per se have a produce company. We basically change the menu on a daily basis. We don't, you know, a lot of places, you know, you get up and you call your orders in, and we don't do that. We basically deal with our local farmers. We bring in a steer every other week. It's about 950 pounds. Pigs are twice a week, whole fish every day, and then goats and what have you. And then our farmers come in every day and drop off product. So it's just kind of what's growing. We write the menu from around that.
You mentioned bringing in the whole animal. Talk about that concept. Why is it so important to you?
For me, it's a sign of respect to the animal. It's so easy to just blow through cases of tenderloins and you know, ribeyes and what have you. But what happens to the rest of the animal? And it was a chance for myself and my chefs to teach cooks how to, and our consumers, how to properly use and respect that entire piece of that entire carcass.
And you emphasized a few moments ago that the menu at Underbelly literally changes every day.
It does.
Why and how does that happen?
You know, animals only have so many pieces, and that's kind of how it works. And farmers only plant so much. So on any given day, you know, if we say we bring in a steer or we bring in our pigs, well, then we only have, you know, it's an 8-bone pork rack. So for each pig, it's only, you know, 14 to 16 pork chops. And so that can go on any given night really quick. And so we end up having to change throughout the night or throughout the, you know, every day.
So it's what's available. But also I get the sense that it's what's in season. Is that right?
100%. You know, right now we're winding down on cauliflower and broccoli, and you're starting to, you know, you know what's getting ready to happen. You know the eggplant's coming in, you know peppers are coming in, tomatoes, peaches. And so that's, you know, how we write the menu every day based on that. And, you know, some days farmers will bring you something and then the next day they don't. And so it's a matter of what they're growing. And just trying to help that out and support our local economy as well.
Chris, when you say at Underbelly it's all about relationships, what do you mean?
Well, it is all about relationships. It's about conversations and having, you know, these long thought processes that you're dealing with when you're talking with farmers and getting them to understand where your vision is, but also understanding where their vision is. And if they're really good at growing certain things, like, I'm going to let you grow that. I'm not going to tell you to go outside of that box and grow something else and, you know, try and utilize that. I'm going to go with what you really know. And, you know, and then there's certain times where a lot of questions are asked, like, what do you really want? It's like, well, I would like to see, you know, dent corn raised for us. And, like, we have one farmer that grows our entire grit production for the entire year in a matter of a month. She's already planted Hickory King and Bloody Butcher for us, and then we'll use those for the entire year. That comes in late June, July, and August. And then those are our grits for the entire year.
Does that extend to your relationships with ranchers who provide you with meat?
Absolutely. You know, we deal a lot with Black Hills here in Houston, and then like our cattle farmer is 44 farms, and we solely use that product, and it's about understanding their genetics and how their animals are raised and making sure that our animals only have one bad day.
The theme of our show today is diverse cultures and diverse culinary tastes in Houston.
Yes.
Creole is thrown around a lot in this part of the country between Houston and New Orleans, but Creole is a deceiving word.
Yeah.
Tell us your definition of Creole cuisine.
Well, Creole, what we talk about when we say that is it's cultures all combining into one area, and it's not a forced thing, it's a natural thing. In the 1700s, 1800s, it was definitely, New Orleans and Louisiana, where you had the French and the Spanish and, the Haitian populations and the African populations all coming into one area. And now that has happened here in Houston in the past 40 years, where you've seen the Vietnamese immigration, and the Chinese immigration, and the Mexican immigration, and the, the Middle Eastern immigration, all these populations coming into one area and kind of combining and living together. And it's natural. So when you talk about Creole, that's really kind of the definition of that.
Now, we're going to highlight the theme of today's show, Houston's culinary diversity.
Mm-hmm.
So let's pick an item from Underbelly's lunch menu, Vietnamese beef stew.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to detail for us exactly how you make Vietnamese beef stew.
Well, we start off, we take something like a braisable meat, something that has a little bit more fat and a little bit more muscle structure to it, not something that's really lean or tender. Because we want that long, slow cooking process. And so we're going to use something from the hind quarter. So we'll take that and break it down into smaller pieces. We start by searing it off. And then we add in onions and garlic and star anise and cinnamon and fish sauce, and red wine, and beef stock, and let that braise. And then halfway through, we add carrots into it. And that's a traditional dish called thịt khô. Which is a very strong Vietnamese dish. And so we're adding those flavors of a good, long, braised beef that you would normally see in French culture with red wine, but we're adding the addition of fish sauce and star anise and these baking spices into it. And it really gives it this really aromatic and flavorful broth.
And that makes it distinctly Vietnamese, right?
Yes, sir.
Now, let's do the same thing with the dinner menu. I spent a year serving in the U.S. Army in Korea.
Uh-huh.
So I want to hear how you prepare Korean braised goat and dumplings.
When we talk about the dumplings, what we're talking about is a rice stick. So it's a take on a dish called tteokbokki, which is a traditional kind of Korean street food or just a Korean snack, where it's rice that has been soaked overnight and then milled into a powder, added with a little bit of water to make a paste, and then it's put into molds and steamed. And then it comes extruded into like these long little sticks, and we basically cut those sticks down. We take that and we sear it in a hot pan in a little bit of oil, and then we add braised goat to it, onions, beer, and then a fermented red chili paste called gochujang, which is kind of like our form of a Korean ketchup, if you will, but nice and spice and thick paste. And we add a little bit of butter at the end to that. And that's kind of the dish. And it's one of those dishes that's just really perfect. It's culturally correct. It's texturally pleasing. The heat levels on it are amazing. And it's the dish that's been on since, day one. And it's the one thing that has been very sustainable for us because we can get goats in. It highlights the culture perfectly. And so that's actually been on the menu on every one at lunch and dinner menu since we opened.
And I noticed you also offer kimchi, for which I developed a taste during my time in Korea.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give us that recipe real quickly?
Well, it's just, you're fermenting cabbage with gochujang and some sugar and spice and just letting that ferment. And it's just, cabbage brings out a natural flavor, but you can kimchi almost anything, really. It has a cell structure to it, so.
This is Chris Shepard, the owner and executive chef at Underbelly. He has won the 2014 James Beard Award for Best Chef in the Southwest. He was named one of the top 10 best new chefs in America by Food and Wine. And Underbelly was named to the National Eater 38. That's one of the 38 essential restaurants in America. That was in 2015. And it was listed as one of the best new restaurants in the country by both Bon Appetit and Esquire magazines in 2014. Very cool. Congratulations on all that, Chris.
Appreciate it.
And Chris, of course, owns Underbelly, one of Houston's destination restaurants at 1100 Westheimer. Underbelly is closed today, Sunday, but they're open at 11 a.m. tomorrow for lunch. Let's stay in touch, Chris. We'd love to hear about a couple of those 40-some-odd other Houston restaurants you endorse on your website, okay?
Appreciate it. Yeah, I would love to talk about them.
Stay patient. Dinner will be ready right after the smoke alarm goes off. The Outdoor Cooking Show will be back with more smoking hot tips for you and your old flame after this short break.
Nothing beats farm fresh produce. Roadside stands are great, but not always well stocked. But Froberg's Farm on Highway 6 in Alvin always has produce fresh from the field. You can't get produce this fresh in stores. Froberg's has a spacious covered market, or you can pick your own produce if you prefer. This time of year is great for cabbage, cauliflower, collard and mustard greens, turnips, radishes, rutabagas, kumquats, even Brussels sprouts, and a whole lot more. Fruits, vegetables, jams, jellies, pickles, and a huge selection of dried beans and peas. And Froberg's Farm is famous for its pies, both traditional homemade or fried pies, with over 20 different flavors. Order in advance, and Froberg's can have as many as you need ready for pickup. And be sure you visit Greek Smokehouse right next door while you're there. Froberg's Farm, only 8 miles south of 288 and 2.5 miles from Business 35 on Highway 6 in Alvin. Open 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Froberg's Farm. Farm fresh produce since 1936. Headed home from the field with an ice cooler full of wild game? Drop it off at Belleville Meat Market's new processing facility and see how they've taken wild game processing and made it a front door experience. Belleville Meat Market hasn't changed the quality of their products or services for 35 years, so they're not changing because they're growing because they haven't changed. Take your wild game to Belleville Meat Market's new wild game processing plant and take the worry out of processing it into any high-quality cut of meat you want. And if you can't make it to Belleville Meat Market, be sure you check out their newly redesigned website and online store, BellevilleMeatMarket.com, offering a wide variety of their most popular pecan smoke products. But if you've got wild game, Belleville Meat Market's new processing facility will handle everything for you, and it's right next door to their landmark location. Belleville Meat Market and Wild Game Processing Center, conveniently located just 14 miles north of I-10 and 14 miles south of Highway 290 on Highway 36 in Belleville. Randy Hames is my name, but many of you know me better as half of one of Houston's most iconic early morning comedy radio shows, The Hudson and Harrigan Show. Now, I'm no longer Irv Harrigan, but I've written a book about the show that I think you'll love. Fred Olson and I hosted the show for almost 30 years, and we enjoyed unbelievable rating success and won numerous awards. But the best part was, we were just having fun. Listeners told us they laughed all the way to work every day, too, with characters such as Jim Bob Jumpback, The Story Guy, and Tyrone, plus dozens of others. Houston's morning show recreates some of those hilarious on-air moments and gives you a unique behind-the-scenes peek at even funnier off-air events. Plus, I've carefully chronicled an accurate history of the show and how it evolved. Houston's Morning Show. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or as an audiobook on iTunes. Get your copy of Houston's Morning Show today and join the fun. Randy Hames here, and my salsa has to pass the chip test. That's why I personally recommend Jake's Atomic Salsa. Jake Johnson isn't your typical middle school student. He's picky about salsa, too, so he developed his own. And it was so good, his friends asked him to sell them some, and Jake's Atomic Salsa was born. Jake's Atomic Salsa has a hearty blend of tomatoes, plus roasted poblano, serrano, jalapeno, and habanero peppers. It also includes lots of fresh lemon and lime juice to add bright notes, with no large chunks of onion or cilantro. Jake's Atomic Salsa comes in four different flavors, from mild to out-of-this-world spicy, and goes great with eggs, enchiladas, meatloaf, Bloody Marys, or just pour it over cream cheese. It's the best salsa you've ever tasted, and all the profits go to pay for Jake's college education. Check out Jake's Atomic Salsa on Facebook, and go to jakesatomicsalsa.com to order a few jars, or try the variety pack with all four flavors. I know, you'll agree with me, Jake's Atomic Salsa is the bomb.
Stand back. We've got our grill on. The Outdoor Cooking Show is brought to you by Boyd's One Stop at the Texas City Dyke. Now, here's your host, the daddy-o of the patio, Randy Hames.
Our guest now has quite the impressive resume, so make welcome Anita Jason Ghani of Pondicherry on Kirby Drive. Hi, Anita. How you doing?
I'm wonderful. Thank you, Randy.
Anita has a fascinating background, but I'd rather she tell you about it than me. Her bio says that she was raised in India. Were you born there?
Yes.
And you're trained as a microbiologist?
Correct.
So how did you go from microbiology to a culinary career?
Well, cooking career in India doesn't have the respect that it deserves. At least in those days, it did not. So my parents said, our home cook can teach you how to cook. Go do something real in college. That's how I ended up in microbiology. And then when I came here to the U.S., I pursued my cooking passion, and here I am.
Now, you started off at Cafe Annie. That's pretty heady stuff for your first job, but what did you do there?
I was not a pastry chef, even though that has been published in many publications. I was, I worked in the pastry department. I was a pastry helper. I learned, and it's interesting, when I went looking for a job, I had no interest in pastry. I don't have a sweet tooth, and I did not want to work there, but that's the only thing they offered me, and I took it. I knew that was my only way in. And I realized at the end of that I needed that more than anything else, which is often how life turns out. So I learned a lot, and it started a passion for baking, and that slowly has grown into having my own, sub-bakery within the restaurant.
So how did Pondicherry come about?
Well, I've had a restaurant, Indica, for about 16 years, and that's where everything started. That was kind of my love child. It was just creative work without attention to anything outside of what I wanted to do. So then after doing years of that, I moved to, I want to take this to a street level and come up with food that, you would eat on the streets of India and not just eat food that's beautiful and plated. So then we opened Pondicherry 5 years ago. And within that opening, there was a lot of delay because of, economy and construction. So I had some time to kill, and I got into baking as a release of just stress and other things. And I learned that I actually really enjoy baking. So that's how I got. And then when we opened it, we had one cookie at the counter, and now I have almost an entire bakery. So it's a very different bakery than most. We don't do big production. We do a lot of small specialty production, but it's a lot of fun.
Pondicherry, where does the name derive?
From a city in southern India. It's on the southern coast, a city I used to go to a lot as a child. It's the only region of India that was colonized by the French in the 1700s. And the way it's pronounced, the way it's written is Pondi with a cherry at the end, as in how you would say a cherry. That's the anglicized name for that town. But the way I spell it for the restaurant is the way it was spelled in the 1700s. And I came upon that word from a map that an old customer gave me from the 1700s. And I found that name there. So it all has a lot of meaning and emotion behind it. It's really an expression of, my heart, the restaurant. So I do what I love to eat there.
And I'm sure Anita is very proud to tell you that she's opened a New York City location of Pondicherry in Flatiron. That's where she's talking to us from right now. And congratulations are also in order. Pondicherry received the James Beard nomination for Best New Restaurant in 2012. Very nice.
Thank you.
Now, at Pondicherry, you serve what you call non-traditional Indian dishes. What do you mean by non-traditional Indian dishes?
Well, Indian cuisine is an old cuisine, and it has slowly gathered. It's like a moss that has gathered, stone that has gathered moss over the years. And it's a cuisine that has been influenced from the Iranians, the English, the Mughals. So there is so much influence in the cuisine that I didn't want to play with it too much, but I feel there are things that we do in India that don't make sense anymore to me. Like, we cook our vegetables till they are blue in the face. We throw, and this is some of this is restaurant food, and some of it is home cooking. Even in homes, there's I think it's just a country that has evolved so much, but in food, it was at a standstill still, at least the time that I was growing up, and there was not much creativity. Now in India, there is a lot of creativity, and people are opening up their eyes to what all they can do with Indian food. So I just wanted to take it outside the box and kind of clean it up and not serve food that is cooked to death or spiced where your palate is numb and add so much fat to the food where you're just tasting fat and nothing else. So really, I feel like I've just taken it and I've changed it a bit to what I think is more palatable and how I would like to eat it. And in the end of the day, I'm a health nut because I want to feel good after I eat a meal. I don't want it just to taste good. So I want to know how I feel the next day, that night, and that's what I judge my food from, not necessarily from how great it tastes.
And given your proclivity as a pastry chef, obviously you have a bunch of really nice-looking sandwiches on your lunch menu. Tell us about the Buddha Bun Kebab.
So you know that Buddhism is, you know, obviously a religion, and then there's another religion in India called Jainism, and basically they are the ultimate, you know, tree huggers of India. They they won't harm anything. Like they will, the Orthodox Jains will not only not eat dairy, or they're the ultimate vegans. They will not only not eat dairy, they won't even walk with shoes on the ground because they're afraid that, so they wear these socks so that they don't kill the, and I have a lot of respect for that community. And they've come up with a cuisine that is, you know, vegetarian, and they use spices in interesting ways. So I have some Jain customers that I wanted to create that something for that they could eat. So they won't eat potatoes that grow underground because it kills the plant. They won't wear shoes and walk because it kills bugs when they walk. So the Buddha Bun Kebab basically is a creation that is truly clean food. It's made with all ingredients that are not, you know, in any way create harm to the environment or to any living being. And that was inspiration behind that. Essentially, it's a slab of, so the Jains will eat cheese as long as it's from a cow that, some Jains will eat cow, will eat cheese from milk that is expressed from a happy cow, and it's, you know, good quality milk. So we make our own paneer, and we put a slab of that, and we put some nuts in there, and we put some avocado in there, and we put a couple of chutneys in there, and we make our own bun from, you know, flour and pumpkin and some spices. It's delicious.
And you have Meatless Mondays at Pondicherry. Is that popular with your non-Indian customers, or was it kind of difficult to sell right at first?
I mean, it's always been difficult to sell because there's like, 2 or 5% of people that are vegetarians in the country. So it's definitely a challenge. But I feel like there is definitely more and more interest in vegetarian food as, you know, the consciousness of people changes. And I'm hoping that our Meatless Mondays are as insanely packed as our Saturday nights are. And that's at least my dream. And I hope it comes true soon.
And from looking at your menu, Anita, it's very obvious that breakfast is a big part of what you do at Pondicherry.
Yes.
Talk about that for just a moment.
So people think, you know, when we first opened Pondicherry, they were like, Indian breakfast, never heard of that. It's like, well, that's because you've never been to India and eaten breakfast there. Because we have a whole litany of foods that works great for breakfast. So breakfast was definitely an initial challenge, but once we got people in the door, it's, you know, it's like really any other culture. We eat bread, we eat eggs, we eat potatoes, we eat some fat, and that's all it is. So we came up with a menu of foods that I feel translated into, you know, a wonderful breakfast menu. And we have eggs, and we have street food style eggs, and we have buns with cheese in them. And, you know, it's not a whole lot different than, except that there's always spices in it. You know, we have spices in everything. That's what we Indians do really well. We know how to incorporate spices from morning to night. And that's what I feel like I do best.
And tell us about Uttapam pancakes. Very quickly, we're running out of time.
Sure. Uttapam is essentially a fermented pancake made from rice and lentils. And it's a really interesting, deeply flavorful bread. And I love it. You can eat it in a thin manner like a dosa, which people are more familiar with. And uttapam is kind of a fat dosa. And I feel it has more weight and more taste. And we do uttapams for breakfast, for lunch, and for dinner.
We've been talking to Anita Jaisinghani, the creator, the owner, and the executive chef at Pondicherry, one of the Houston Chronicle's top 100 restaurants every year since it's opened. They are located at 2800 Kirby Drive in Houston, and they're also in the Flatiron District in New York City. Thanks for sharing the diversity of your Indian cuisine with us, Anita, and we hope you'll come back and visit with us real soon.
You're most welcome. Thank you.
Life is short. Grill while you can. Randy will be back with more food and fun after this break.
Boyd's One Stop. The name says it all. If you like seafood, you'll love Boyd's, conveniently located at the base of the Texas City Dike. Boyd's One Stop has bait, tackle, fresh seafood, and even a restaurant, all at 227 Dike Road. If you fish Galveston Bay, Boyd's is the one and only stop for everything you need. There's a reason why they're called the live shrimp capital of Texas. But they've also got lots of finger mullet, croaker, plus fresh dead shrimp, shad, and squid. Plus, Boyd's has tackle galore, ice and ice chests, and cold drinks and snacks. Just need fresh fish for a family seafood feast? The freshest seafood, like table shrimp, live blue crab, and crawfish when in season, is in stock and ready for you at Boyd's. And if you're hungry right now, check out Boyd's Cajun Grill Express right next door, with a wide variety of breakfast, lunch, and dinner items like crawfish, oyster po' boys, and fried seafood platters. Boyd's One Stop, the name says it all. 227 Dike Road at the base of the Texas City Dike.
If you're in the energy industry and want to drive down costs, it's time to automate. NuStar Energy Services provides automation solutions for pipelines, independent producers, and any company in the exploration and production sector. Still sending someone out in a pickup to read the flow computer on your well? For about $1 a day, NuStar can collect all the data remotely so you can monitor everything on a customized web portal. Heck, you can't even buy a gallon of gas for a truck for $1. How about the levels on your tanks at the well site? For about $1 a day, NuStar can set up remote monitoring so you can see the level in real time and even turn pumps on or off remotely. And remember, NuStar's remote monitoring packages start at about $1 a day. So call NuStar Energy Services today and improve your bottom line. 832-917-1200. That's 832-917-1200. Or NuStarInc.com.
Nothing beats farm fresh produce. Roadside stands are great, but not always well stocked. But Froberg's Farm on Highway 6 in Alvin always has produce fresh from the field. You can't get produce this fresh in stores. Froberg's has a spacious covered market, or you can pick your own produce if you prefer. This time of year is great for cabbage, cauliflower, collard and mustard greens, turnips, radishes, rutabagas, kumquats, even Brussels sprouts, and a whole lot more. Fruits, vegetables, jams, jellies, pickles, and a huge selection of dried beans and peas. And Froberg's Farm is famous for its pies, both traditional homemade or fried pies, with over 20 different flavors. Order in advance, and Froberg's can have as many as you need ready for pickup. And be sure you visit Greek Smokehouse right next door while you're there. Froberg's Farm, only 8 miles south of 288 and 2.5 miles from Business 35 on Highway 6 in Alvin. Open 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Froberg's Farm. Farm fresh produce since 1936.
Does the cell phone connectivity in your office stink? Do you routinely miss calls? Lots of buildings have dead zones, and that means garbled or dropped calls. But not anymore. Texas Cell Phone Boosters provides FCC-approved cell phone booster systems that can make dead zones a thing of the past. These are not rinky-dink systems from big box stores. These are commercial-grade booster systems that cover tens of thousands of square feet. And Texas Cell Phone Boosters will specifically engineer and install a system in your office or warehouse. If you drive or regularly work in remote locations, Texas Cell Phone Boosters can help you boost a weak signal from a tower a long way off. So don't miss calls from potential customers any longer. Call the pros at Texas Cell Phone Boosters, 832-551-1000. That's 832-551-1000. Or go to texascellphoneboosters.com.
May the forks be with you. The Outdoor Cooking Show is brought to you by Froberg's Farm on Highway 6 in Alvin. Now, here's the man who turns all the grills on, Randy Haynes.
You know, I start to feel like Mr. Lonely if I don't talk to my old radio buddy from the Hudson and Harrigan Show at least once a week. So here's Fred Olson. What's up, pal?
Mr. Lonely.
Okay, disc jockey question. Disc jockey question.
Yeah.
Who sang the hit song Mr. Lonely?
Bobby Vinton.
Yeah, you're too good. Can you name the year?
19, I was too young to remember.
You liar, you.
Lonely, I always thought of Jerry Lewis, lonely, I'm Mr. Lonely.
Okay, it was 1964.
64, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I sure messed up that memory for a lot of people. That's my job.
You know, to my wife, that is one of my most irritating character traits, or flaws, I guess.
Yeah.
Every time we hear one of our old favorite songs from back in the 60s or the 70s, I'll always say, name the artist.
I do that to people, too. I kind of do that because I remember the actual record, the 45 spinning on the turntable. I go, oh, that was a Roulette record, or that was RCA, or that was Columbia. I remember, oddly enough, because we spun so many of those things.
That's right.
That I remember the actual 45 and the label, yeah.
Well, my wife hits it about 50% of the time, but it's irritating to her because, of course, we were disc jockeys. We played Mr. Lonely thousands of times.
Yeah.
So we have the distinct advantage over people like our wives. So if we're ever at dinner, the four of us are together at dinner, and my wife just reaches over and clocks me upside the head for seemingly no apparent reason whatsoever, it's probably because I've just whispered, name the artist.
Essex, you know, or the Tremolos, or so, you know, if you really want to feel young, be, the other day I was in the gym and More Than a Feeling by Boston came on. I went, oh, I used to play that. I played that when it was a hit.
Yeah, and I got another good memory for you based on Lonely.
All right,
remember that song from Team America by Kim Jong Il? I'm so Ronery.
I'm Ronery. I'm so Ronery.
Oh, by the way, for those of you who didn't keep up with it, Kim Jong-il died of extreme roneriness.
Ronery, I'm so ronery. Yeah, Team America is a movie that is so wrong on so many levels.
Yeah, yeah.
But that song is just hilarious.
It is. And you know, I can remember when a lot of people thought that Kim Jong-il dying was a good thing, but it looks like his son might be even worse.
The devil you know, right?
Right. And I would ask you what you think of politics these days, but I think I already know the answer.
Yeah, pretty much. So that'd take another hour and a half, and you don't have that long. We only have a few minutes here.
Okay, so. Here's one. Name the board game based on this description.
Okay.
After each trip all the way around the board, you pass go. If you're the leader, you must give up one piece of property to the player with the least, including hotels, houses, etc. Instead of collecting $200, you must pay 35% income tax to be split among all the other players. Everyone quits buying anything and waits for someone to pass go so they can get their free handout. What game are you playing?
Obamanomics.
Close. Burnopoly. Get it? Bernie.
Oh, Bernieopoly. That's great, though. That's great. Like the socialists always say, you pretend to work and we'll pretend to pay you.
See, this is why they fired us from that last year.
Well, I don't know about that. I don't want to get in a lawsuit.
Well, we're off to a scintillating start, aren't we?
Oh, hey, I love talking about this stuff.
Let's switch from politics to the theme for today's show, which is diversity. But, you know, even diversity is kind of a political football lately.
Oh, yeah.
Large corporations talk about focusing on diversity. But you and I both know that that's business speak for hire more people who look different but think just like the boss. Am I right?
Well, yeah, but it's the way of the world. I mean, the world's getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and it's just going to happen. And I look at it this way, especially when it comes to food and diversity. If it wasn't for diversity, all we would have to eat would be barbecue and hamburgers. Nothing wrong with that, but after a while, as hunter-gatherers, we're going to start seeking out other things, you know. One of the reasons I loved living in the belly of the beast in Houston, inside the loop for so many years, I was close to work, number one. But the most important thing was there was so much cool stuff to do that was so close. You know, Sugar Land has grown so much, but back when we used to live there in the beginning, there was nothing to do.
Right.
So, but in town, I mean, just the food is, I mean, there'd be Indian food, there was Thai food. Of course, yeah, I love Chinese food. And just whether you wanted vegetarian or the full kabuki, you wanted French, you wanted Italian. We have it all in Houston. It's just remarkable.
Well, I remember when you and I first moved out to the First Colony area in Sugarland, and we thought culinary diversity was having a Taco Bell and a KFC right next door to each other on Highway 6.
I was so excited when that happened. You remember?
I do.
I said, I could buy a bag of food for $3.99 now.
Yeah.
And now it's $8.99. Yeah.
But now, Sugarland has restaurants with cuisine literally from all over the world. You mentioned China, but also Japan, Brazil, Honduras, of course, France and Germany and Italy, and India, and of course, Mexico.
That's a weak spot for me, but I'll tell you what I think is the new Mexican food, and if you haven't tried it, hardly recommend it. A couple years ago, it was my birthday. We were supposed to meet some friends in downtown Houston. He's a lawyer, had a thing come up. He couldn't make it, so he had reservations at this Indian restaurant, and I really had almost no experience with Indian food. So Bev and I go in alone and sit down, and they help us order things. Before I know it, I'm knee-deep in food, and I'm in heaven with it's Indian food, which I kind of call my new Mexican. I mean, from the sog paneer, the naan bread is phenomenal. Just the chicken tikka, the different spices are just, I mean, I'd hardly recommend it. If you know nothing about it, go to a good Indian restaurant and say, help me out here. And they truly will take their time, I believe it, and help you pick out things that you'll like.
Now, you and Bev live out in the middle of nowhere now, so you don't really eat at restaurants much anymore, but you used to live
right
down near West Gray, and there were, and still are,
yes,
a lot of extremely diverse restaurants in that neighborhood. Any favorites?
Let's see, it would have been the Thai Pepper. Is the Thai Pepper right there on Alabama? They had this hot soup that I used to call the Tureen of Hell. There's Nitnoi in the village. It's been a while since I've lived there, but Nitnoi had this salad, this spicy salad that would just make your eyeballs sweat that I just absolutely love. And the Thai Pepper was another one, and some of the others. There are so many now. I mean, in the 7 years we've been gone, it's all different. I drive through and the neighborhood's all different. Different restaurants, new Italian places, and new, of course, there's a Mexican food restaurant like on every block, but we love that, so...
So what kind of dishes stand out in your memory from some of those restaurants?
Oh, again, the Thai salad was really good. What else? And I came to like sushi a lot. You know, sushi is the cooked, if you want it to be like, you know, spring rolls, things like that, California rolls, that's sushi. But sashimi, which is the raw stuff,
right,
I came to enjoy too, whether it's octopus or whether it's tuna. The hamachi, yellowfin, stuff like that. I don't know. I just formed a real taste for it. And you talk about diverse.
And, you know, it's really kind of ironically fitting that Houston and Sugar Land are so openly diverse and embrace diversity, because the entire state of Texas was founded on diverse cultural immigration, which started with Stephen F. Austin. I mean, he brought a lot of Caucasian settlers, but they were from all over Europe, the Mediterranean, Britain and France and Germany and Czechoslovakia and Poland and Italy and Spain and Greece. Good Lord.
Right.
All those cultures, then blending with Native Americans and Latin Americans who already lived here. So Texas was kind of a melting pot culinarily before melting pot was even invented.
Oh, and the area where we live out here, Columbus, Weimar area, is such incredible German heritage. There are people who still speak the German. They still have that old Czech accent to them, some of the old folks. And,
yep.
And my grandfather was from Czechoslovakia. And I'll tell you a quick story if we have time about what happened here way back in the 1800s. There was a German prince, of course, in Germany, and he'd heard on this brochure thing from Texas that there was all this land available. And this man was selling it. And he said, I'm going to start a whole new community in this place called Texas in America. And so they buy the land, they get here, they land at Galveston, they get here, and the guy said, well, by the way, the only thing I didn't tell you, it's loaded with Comanches.
So bring your gun.
Yeah, they didn't tell him that. I love that story. I've got friends here whose family landed in Galveston back in the 1800s, and they still own some of those farms and ranches that are from the 1800s out here, too.
Well, we're out of time again, my friend. You guys hitch up the old covered wagon and head into town soon. Let's get some grub. As Roy Rogers would say, see you later, Gabby.
I go right over here.
We hope you've enjoyed this edition of the Outdoor Cooking Show. Send us your burning questions and favorite recipes in a private message on our Facebook page, The Outdoor Cooking Show, or visit our website, theoutdoorcookingshow.com. Join us next week for more tasty food and fun over a red-hot grill on The Outdoor Cooking Show.
How's about cooking something else?